Hello, hello, and welcome back as we go through this series on how to maximize your influence when you don't have the power, you don't have the position, you're not an authority, maybe you don't think you have any cards to play, but you do when you really understand the power of influence. Let's focus on the art and science of expectations. This is a critical aspect of your ability to influence without authority. To influence without that power is to understand human behavior and expectations. Expectations influence reality. Let's talk a little bit about how this works, because this is a science that a lot of people really haven't thought through, that a lot of people don't realize what's going on. So let's talk about this for a second and show you how it works. Now, the challenge with expectations is a lot of people get into a persuasion situation. They say, well, you wouldn't be interested, would you? Okay. And they kind of inflect up. We know when you your inflection goes up, that you're not very confident. You probably wouldn't like this, or you might shoot this idea down. What people expect to happen a lot of times happens. They do influence reality. It's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. When someone expects you to perform your job or produce a certain result, we tend to fulfill this expectation. And this is something that's very, very powerful. For example, it can be used in a negative way too. If you want to play a joke on a coworker, you get three or four people together, and the first person goes up to the coworker and says, hey, are you sick? You look sick. Oh, no, I'm fine. And the second coworker, hey, you're kind of pale. You sick? No, I think I'm okay. And by the time the fourth person does it, it's like they say, well, yeah, I'm not feeling well. I'm going home. And that's the power of expectations. And what we need to understand with expectations is we communicate our expectations through our language, through our voice, through our body. And sometimes we don't even realize what expectations we're projecting. Have you ever gone into a store and felt guilty for not buying? Have you ever gone to maybe even a timeshare presentation? And some people do, some people don't. It depends on their expectations. But we project this. Let me give you an example. When I married my wife, she grew up in a family that when you hurt yourself, you laughed. Or you laughed at the other person. So I thought it was quite strange. I grated my finger on a cheese grater, blood everywhere, and she starts laughing. And at the time, I thought that was very strange. Now, fast forward, we have kids. And it's interesting to watch, like, children at a park, they bonk their head. And then they look at their parents, and when the parents give that sad face and that scared face, the child on cue will cry. So one thing that we've implemented, kids running around the house, they bonk their head, they fall over, they look at us, we all burst into laughter. Okay, I'm not talking about severed limbs. I'm talking about minor bumps and bruises here. So we start laughing, and what do they start doing? They start laughing too, and that's the power of expectations. Even when you look at something like your attitude, or somebody else's attitude. Attitude comes from our expectations, and this is a powerful thing that we don't think about too much. Let me give you some examples. There was a study done at Harvard, and what happened is they gave the students all these different rats, and half the students were told they were smart rats, and the other half were told they were dumb rats, and they put them through a maze, and they would time them. They were the same rats. But the fast rats, for some reason, had faster times in the maze than the dumb rats. We also saw somebody with a tire coupon. The expectation of a coupon is when you release it, you save money. Now, this coupon had a printing error on it, and it actually cost people more money to use it, but they had the same response rate because it was a coupon. There's an expectation there. Let me give you another example. Word choice. When somebody is told that they're going to go to a presentation or they're going to meet somebody that is cold, industrious, practical, and determined, and they had them evaluate them afterwards, but then the other group was told that this person is warm, industrious, practical, and determined. So the only difference was the first word. So first one was cold, second one was warm, but then the other three words were the same, industrious, practical, and determined, and it made a big difference in how they judged that person. Here's what the studies show. Assembly line workers at a plant were just hired. Half were told, hey, it's simple. It's easy, just do it that way. And the other half we're told it's complex, it's hard, it's going to take you a while to get it. And of course, amazing things happen that the simple people got it real fast. So these are the expectations that you can manage. Even with students, they said, well, you're not very good at math versus you're great at math. Maintain those expectations. In one study, girls were told they would perform poorly on a math test, and the other one they were told to perform great on the math test, and the results were amazing. Even with school teachers. Now, this can be neither good or bad. I think we've all had school teachers that raised our expectations of ourselves, and we had school teachers that squashed our expectations of ourselves. Now, a study was done in San Francisco. There was two Head Start teachers, and they were equal as far as talent and what they did in the classroom. Then they grabbed students who were also tested and were equal in IQ. So these teachers were equal and the students were equal. And they probably don't allow this type of study anymore. And the first teacher, they said, hey, you've got pupils that have high potential. Don't stand in their way. They're racers. They're ready to run. Do what you can. And the other teacher was told, well, we're sorry about your students this year. You can't expect good students every year. Just do the best you can. Be understanding. Okay, same students, same teachers, but that expectation made a huge difference in what those students were able to accomplish. Another study was done with students where they would bring candy into a classroom. This was an elementary school class. Now, when you give an elementary school child a piece of candy with the wrapper, they're going to eat the candy, and what's going to happen with the wrapper? Throw it on the floor, and that's what they did. And so they counted the number of wrappers on the floor. And this is something you can use with your children. Then over the next couple weeks, what happened? The teacher would frequently say, you know, this is a neat and tidy class. This is one of the cleanest classes I've had. The principal would come in. Hey, I heard you're the cleanest class in school. The custodian wrote a note on the blackboard. Thank you for being so clean. 3 weeks later, they pass out the candy again. And of course, not very many wrappers made it on the floor, just based on that expectation. So if you're trying to influence without position or without authority, sometimes that expectation that they're going to do business with you, that expectation that they're going to help you out goes a long way. And a lot of people call this the placebo effect. In fact, does anybody know how often placebos work? About 35 to 50% of the time. Everyone knows what a placebo is, right? Okay, it's a sugar pill. So they do that in medical studies. And when people think they're real, they work quite a bit. Let me give you some of the studies. One study was done with stomach medicine. Now, stomach medicine takes 30 minutes to work, but most people find relief in 12 minutes. People gave out, it was actually, I think it was either Sprite or 7-Up. They gave it to people. They didn't know what it was. Said, okay, this will induce vomiting. And when they believed it, 80% did vomit. And that's the power of the placebo sometimes. I remember I was sitting on the couch. I had this headache. And my wife said, do you want some aspirin? And she went upstairs and got me some aspirin. She was really nice. I took the aspirin. The headache went away. 2 hours later, I go upstairs and I find the bottle she gave me was a laxative. Okay. My headache went away when she gave me the aspirin. But now when I found out it was a laxative, the headache came back. And, well, other things started to happen. But that's a whole other story. There's the power of a placebo here. Even during the Korean War, they ran out of morphine and they were giving placebos. And what they found is when the nurse gave the placebo, the soldiers didn't feel pain. But when the doctor gave a placebo, they did feel pain. The reason why is the nurse didn't know it was a placebo and the doctor did. We pick up on little mannerisms based on our expectations. So if we're expecting them not to do business with us, if we expect to fail, if we expect them to say no, they're picking up on little mannerisms that we need to adjust. So let's talk about some application here. The first one is reputation expectations. Winston Churchill said it the best. He said, I have found that the best way to get another to acquire a virtue is to impute it to him or to give it to him. When you say things like, well, you've always impressed me with your ability to, goes a long way. I've always liked the fact that you've been honest with me. Johann Wolfgang Van Gogh said the best. He says, treat a man as he appears to be and you make him worse, but treat a man as if he already were what he potentially could be and you make him what he should be. Meaning that you just expect them to behave like you want them to behave. Even a police officer would say things to a criminal. I know you have a reputation for being the tough guy who's been in a lot of trouble, But everyone tells me one thing that stands out about you is that you never lie. And that makes a difference. So just the reputation and how you treat them. A good one to implement right now comes from NLP or neuro-linguistic programming. It's the presupposition. NLP is neuro-linguistic programming, which studies, you know, kind of how the brain works, the subconscious mind. And let me give you one of the techniques. It's called the presupposition. Basically, the way you talk and the way you act, you are acting and you're assuming like they've already accepted the offer. Let me give you an example. If I was to sell a car, for example, I'd say, "You're really going to love how this car handles in the mountains." Assuming they've already bought it, they're driving in the mountains. Well, when do you want your couch sent? Assuming they've bought the couch. When do you want to start the group meeting? When do you start working on the proposal? Assuming that they're going to accept the proposal. That's what we're talking about in presuppositions. What that means is you're just acting and in a certain way that they've already accepted it. For example, we know in door-to-door sales that just by wiping your feet on the doormat while you're talking to them, wanting to get in, increases the chances they're going to let you in. Handing somebody a pen with the contract or the agreement increases the chances that they're going to autograph it. So your behavior, the way you act, goes a long way. It just drives me nuts. I see it so many times when people say, "You wouldn't be interested, would you?" I mean, really, what does that say? You're telling them that it's not going to happen. "Yeah, you won't like this proposal. Or you probably won't be interested," are terrible things to do and say. See, the power of suggestion can be extremely effective to engage the emotions. You're acting and the words you're using like it's already a done deal. And you can practice that and say, "Okay, when we're doing business together, or when you're building your business," or that type of thing is a presupposition so they can see themselves doing it. Because a lot of people say no because they can't see themselves doing it. And if you can talk in such a way where they can see themselves doing it, it goes a long way. And that's what great persuaders do. When they talk, the person can see it, taste it, touch it, and feel it like it's already happening. That's a presupposition. Another aspect of NLP is called pacing and leading. So this is what it is. You're doing three paces to one lead. So your ratio is 3-1. So it's basically three things that are obviously true. That's a pace. For example, I would say most people would love to be financially free and end their money worries forever. Now, do you think most people would accept that as truth? It is. So three things that are obviously true, they're saying yes, you're getting them to say yes, then you would lead them. That's something you want them to accept. So you would say something like, "Well, the answer to your financial problem is providing the right training at the right time by the right person." So pace, 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 lead. So you want to put some three things that are obviously true in your presentation or over the phone. That's a no-brainer that they're going to accept as true. Then you would lead with something you want them to accept. Trying to get a date. There we go. So what would be three things that you would be obviously true? Hey, you want to go out and have a fun time, go out and have a nice dinner, and be with someone that's a lot of fun. Now, everyone's going to probably say yes to those. Then the lead would be, "Well, that would be perfect because next Friday I'm going to do this. We're going to this restaurant. We're going to this place, and we're going to have a lot of fun," would be what you lead. In network marketing, it would be something like, "Hey, you want to be financially independent? You want to work at home? You want to be your own boss? Yes, yes, yes. Well, then I've got the right business for you to be able to do that, or if I could show you a business where you could do all three of those things, would you be interested?" would be something that you would lead them on. Your expectations is critical. And a big piece of this is going to be your mindset. Remember, attitude comes from your expectations. When you go into a situation over the phone, face to face, you need to program your brain to expect that they're going to accept your offer, to expect they're going to do business with you, to expect they're going to, and then you can fill in the blank. Because if not, they sense little incongruencies in you, and it really hurts your ability to influence. So if you're going to a situation where you need to persuade without position or influence without authority, that expectation that they're going to do it, that they're going to like it, that they're going to want to listen to it, that they're going to want to give you 10 minutes of their time is very, very important. So let's give you some homework. First of all, what expectations are you creating? When you meet with somebody, what is the expectation you have? What is the expectation you're creating? And this week, what I want you to do is practice using your presuppositions. Remember, you're talking and acting like it's a done deal, that you're doing business together, that they've enrolled, that they've signed up, that you're going to help sell their home, or they're going to accept your proposal. So as you talk, build the vision. Can they see it, taste it, touch it, and feel it? Paint the picture that it's already happening and they're going to be successful. They're going to like the proposal. They're going to be successful in the business, whatever it is. And paint that picture that you're already doing business together or they're already doing the things that you want them to do. It seems like such a minor thing, but as I monitor people that go into persuasive situations, as I listen to people do in negotiating, as I listen to people do trying to influence without authority, for example, a lot of times just their word choice and their mannerisms and what they say, they just shot themselves in the foot before it's even happened, and that's why expectations are so powerful. So that's your homework. Look at the expectations you're creating and practice using your presuppositions this week. In every situation, not just persuasive situations. Well, I guess all situations are persuasive, but the presuppositions of where they want to eat or what they want to do or accepting the proposal, it'll really help you out and it'll really make a difference in your ability to persuade and influence.